KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Thank you for joining us on ABQ Connect. Jim Williams with you this afternoon. Really appreciate you being here. My friends Shelley Rep and Birga Alden are in studio with us. They are with the New Mexico Dream Center. And we're talking about human trafficking. I've unfortunately, Shelley, learned these terms from you that I wish I never knew.
Right. You're welcome, Jim.
Minor domestic sex trafficking. That's just one. I mean, then there's, you know, labor trafficking and the gamut of other kinds of things. So welcome to ABQ Connect. This is a tough show, though, to me, because it's talking about something that I never knew existed.
Right.
You know, Shelley, I've known you since you were 16.
Yeah.
I had you on the show when 8-9 years ago, and you were talking about the New Mexico Dream Center. And you began talking about minor domestic sex trafficking, and I'm thinking, this happens in Albuquerque? Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're here about, because this is the National Human Trafficking Prevention Month, the whole month of January. So we wanted to kick off this year, and we're committing to you guys to be on the show fairly regularly. We'll try to get you on once every couple months and really get updates as to what's going on. But this month, you're our featured ministry. So people are going to hear spots about what you're doing. In fact, we had a chance to record those today. Mm-hmm. So I think people are really going to get an education. They're going to really maybe, I hope, feel led to both volunteer. So let's get started with, talk to us about the issue. Shelley, I've kind of briefly said what my perception was before I heard about it, but really enlighten us. What's going on in Albuquerque and New Mexico?
Sure. I think that, Jim, just like you talked about how you weren't aware of this issue, I feel like Birga and I run into this a lot, that people have kind of some misinformation about human trafficking, what it looks like and how it happens. And since this is Human Trafficking Prevention Month, awareness is super important. People need to know that it is in their community. So when we talk about something like domestic minor sex trafficking, what we're looking at is we are looking at the sex trafficking specifically of children, youth who are born in the United States and are trafficked in the United States. And so I think that's kind of sometimes a hard pill for people to swallow, because they look at trafficking as other than. It's not us, it's other than. So it's the foreign trafficking of foreign nationals who are trying to come over the border, or it's human trafficking that's happening in other countries, or it's human trafficking that's real rare because somebody is kidnapped and then they're trafficked. What we really see is actually much more insidious, where trafficking is happening because you have a trafficker who is grooming this young person specifically for the purpose of exploitive, coercive sex. And that is something that's happening in Albuquerque and in every community across our state. And they don't have to be kidnapped, and they don't have to be a foreign national for this to happen to them. They have to be vulnerable. And so we've got traffickers preying on vulnerabilities to be able to exploit these young people into these situations.
And you can use assistance from our listeners in a couple different ways. So I want to bring everybody's attention to nmdreamcenter.org.
Yes.
You need volunteers. Mm-hmm. Although as soon as I say that, I'm looking at two young women in front of me.
Thank you.
And you guys go out on the streets of Albuquerque, and I don't want to go out on the streets of Albuquerque, and I think I'm pretty tough.
You should meet our gal who does go out on the streets of Albuquerque. She's really tough.
But well, volunteerism doesn't mean exclusively going out on the streets. We've got lots of different roles for people to volunteer.
And that, I'm glad you went there, because I don't want to scare people.
Yeah.
But I also want to offer a challenge, because this is, you guys are choosing to love people that are in some really difficult situations. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you do with them, Birga.
I will answer that question, but I'm going to spin off from something you just said, is that yes, we choose to love the people that are in difficult situations. What we don't do is we don't kick down doors and we don't go after traffickers. And I think that is a very important thing to say out loud, because in our culture and in our entertainment culture, we've got a lot of movies around trafficking that have highlighted the work of law enforcement or highly trained individuals who do that work of kicking down the doors and smashing in the head of the bad guys. That is not us. We are a social service organization and we work with the victims. And so while I love that people are justice oriented and they want to see fairness and righteousness in our community, which yes and amen to that, that is not the work that we're called to do. We're called to love on the people in the very broken situation. So the type of volunteer that we would need coming in our doors is somebody who has a lot of patience, somebody who has an understanding that a very high degree of trauma has been inflicted on people, and that trauma has led to a ton of different behaviors and reactions and interactions. And so this isn't simply people coming in and, you know, filling out a card and saying, I've done my good deed for the week or for the month. I've gotten this person safe. This is long-term work. This is hard, often thankless work. This is sometimes getting cursed at, getting misunderstood, fill in the blank of the things that happen to, you know, our staff and our volunteers. These are highly traumatized people and they react in like manner. And so while we do want volunteers, we want people coming in with their eyes wide open.
Well, and I think the people that are listening, they understand the work of the Holy Spirit in their hearts. Mm. So I'm hoping that through this radio show, that Holy Spirit is saying, we're talking to you. Mm-hmm. This is a great place for you to be. This is both a new adventure and something that you could do to really help some people that need help. And Shelley, have you seen people really recover from being trafficked?
So we have. We have some amazing stories of young people who were in trafficking situations who now as adults are just doing phenomenal work in their lives. We actually have even some staff members that we would call them lived experience specialists, that they have lived a life that includes oftentimes being homeless as a young person, exploitation. And they are incredible assets to our staff and to our client population because they really understand what things look like. And so we have seen those victories in there, but we've also seen some hard stories. You know, there's a lot of people who it takes some time. It takes some time to kind of dig through a situation. And when you think about something like sex trafficking specifically with minors, is you're looking at a form of exploitation that really changes you in so many different ways at an age that you're really so young and don't even necessarily understand what's happened to you. Mm-hmm. And so you can have somebody who really struggles with relationships and what to do because they were exploited at such a young age.
Before we talk about specifics on how a young person ends up on the street, I'm going to confess kind of what my perception was, again, a long time ago. I think you've brought me into the light, Shelley and Virga. So if I would drive down Central, and could be midday, I would see someone that is dressed in crazy looking outfit that somebody might say, oh, that's a prostitute. Mm-hmm. I was insensitive, though. I would see that and go, oh, she's a prostitute. And I didn't, frankly and honestly, have that much empathy. I had this idea, well, this is something she's chosen, whatever. So then when I got to know what you guys are doing, I figured out, gee, that person is probably 16 years old.
Yeah.
This is not, that is a minor.
Yes.
So whatever's happening with that person, whoever's making them do it is the one responsible. This is not something that they would choose to do probably normally. And the person making them do it, the trafficker, should be prosecuted.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the people that are participating in buying that business need to be prosecuted. So again, yes. I start getting my temperature up. I'm embarrassed to say that I had that perception before. So I'm hoping that people will not just consider volunteering, helping financially, but that they'll also be aware to report things that they see that are happening that are wrong. What do they do if somebody sees a trafficking situation or they know a child's being contacted online or something? What does a person do?
I'm going to answer the question.
Yeah, I love it.
But let me do a little side trail. So what we're seeing with individuals who are engaged in commercial sex work on the street is a percentage of trafficking across the board. It is definitely not the majority. And so where trafficking is also happening is on all kinds of internet ads for escort services, dates, things of that nature. And unfortunately, our stats in New Mexico are a very large percentage of victims of human trafficking are trafficked by family members. This are parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, or primary caregivers of the minor who are selling that minor child for sex. And so while it's easy to visually spot a prostitute on Central and say, that is an example of human trafficking, you may very well have that happening next door to your house when an 8-year-old is being exploited by their primary caregiver, sold online, people are coming to the home, whatever that situation looks like. And so I just want to make sure we're painting an accurate picture of what trafficking is looking like in our community. I did a human trafficking 101 training this morning for a domestic violence shelter in another county. And, you know, the reality is that whenever you have individuals who had ever considered buying sex before, if they are removed from their accountability factor, maybe they've gone on vacation, maybe they've come into Albuquerque for a big event, maybe they're traveling for work. If that had ever entered their mind before, chances are they will go ahead and purchase sex when they're not under the watchful eye of their home, you know, network. And so this is happening everywhere. It is not just prostitution on Central.
Yeah, this is Northeast Heights, Southeast Heights, Northwest, Southwest, everywhere.
Across
the state.
Yeah. Well, all across the country, but yes, we're seeing it all across the state. But coming back to volunteers, or what do you do when you see somebody? If you see somebody on Central Avenue who is looking like they're actively involved in prostitution, you're welcome to call, you know, our police force, whether that be Albuquerque Police because you're in city limits or Bernalillo County. That would likely be the agency that would interface with them. We are not emergency responders as a nonprofit organization. You know, if you call us and say, hey, there's somebody looks like they're selling sex at the corner of Central and Wyoming, maybe we have staff availability to go by and see if we can engage with them. But chances are, if we get connected with that person in that moment, that's not the time that they're ready to leave. Mm-hmm. That's not the time that they're ready to receive services. And so what we really hope to do is connect with people. When we do the street outreach, we're looking to see, is it safe to approach? Do they have a trafficker watching? Are we going to put them in harm's way if we approach them? Can we reach them at resource fairs? Can we reach them in some other way? So you might see us tabling at a health fair. Mm. And so individuals who are engaged in commercial sex may be there for other services. Maybe they need, you know, some sort of a medical engagement. They need dental work. They need whatever. And they're at a health resource fair and they happen to come across our table. It's really going to be the one-off more than the, we're going to be out and, you know, try to get through to this person who's actively engaged in sex work and pull them into services, because that's likely not going to be how it's going to happen.
Well, the Dream Center is doing a whole bunch of different things. In our third segment today, we're going to talk about the specifics of the different departments that you have and different services that you provide. But in our next segment, we're going to talk about how prevalent this is. We're not talking about one or two people. Mm-hmm. The numbers are staggering. So please stay with us on ABQ Connect. Tough subject. We're talking about human trafficking, minor domestic sex trafficking. Maybe not a topic for your youngins to listen to the radio with you today. But I'm glad you're with us, because I think you'll find a way that you might be able to help. You'll be interested in knowing all the things that are going on in various communities around the state. And like Birga and Shelley have already said, it's happening all over our country and all over the state of New Mexico. We'll be back on ABQ Connect. Stay with us. While you're listening to the show today, you might want to go to nmdreamcenter.org or go to klyt.fm. The New Mexico Dream Center is our featured ministry of the month. All month, you'll be hearing special announcements about what they do, how to contact them. We'll repeatedly give you the nmdreamcenter.org website, but if it's easier for you, go to klyt.fm. The link to their website is right there. You can find that on our homepage. And we'd like to, at some point, we're going to be able to measure, like 200 people heard this and, you know, several reacted. So we're trying to get to a point where I really love KLYT because people listen to this station intently. Mm-hmm. This is not background noise. I think maybe on the weekends we play some Christian music and stuff and they're blessed by the worship. But during these kind of shows, they're really listening because they want to know what ministries are doing what and how they're doing and how they can help. Mm-hmm. And I think there's so many people. I mean, I'm 67 years old, and I think there's a lot of people in my age category. We still think we're pretty young. And so many of us are not doing a lot, and this is an amazing thing that people could do. So let me go to Shelley. Shelley, share with our listeners how a child or how any person comes to live on the streets of Albuquerque.
Well, in looking at that with a young person especially, is there can be a lot of different factors, but it really does come down to the deterioration of the family at some level. And that could come from maybe a family who the parents are involved in substance abuse and they've got addiction issues. And so all of the resources for the family end up going to that and they lose housing. So that could be a way. We have had some situations where loss of job has led to eviction, which has led to living in a car, which has led to then living on the street because they weren't able to find housing. We have situations with young people who have left their home because, frankly, they've found that it's easier to live on the streets and safer, in their opinion, to live on the streets than it is in their home. We have young people who end up on the street because they've been in the foster care system. They've been in state custody, and they run out of foster homes or foster placements as they continue to age, and there's not enough services or resources. They end up on the street in that way. So there's a lot of different ways that this can happen. The hard thing is that when you've got a young person who's on the street, and especially if they're unaccompanied, there's not an adult or a parent or guardian with them, is that there's a lot of barriers for them to be able to have and get services, obtain services, and then there's really not a lot of services out there. And so what that means is then they have to fend for themselves. And this is where a trafficker can really come in and exploit them, because there's not a lot of options for that young person to have a place of safety or acquire something that will help them remain safe while they're on the street.
So I've heard it said that there are people, well, many people say that we have enough services right now available to people that are without housing, mm-hmm. that if they wanted help, they could get help. Now, I would say that's mostly accurate, but maybe not the best fit for everybody. We'll have to talk about that on another show.
Well, can we say something about it right now?
Well, yeah, but let me, I want you to, but I also want you to add this. You mentioned that children, especially adolescents under 18, they cannot actually get these services. So explain that as well.
So we have a situation here in New Mexico where you can run away at the age of 14 legally.
You can? Legally? Oh, wow.
Legally run away, but you cannot access any public services. So you could not, at 14, 15, 16, check yourself into a hotel or a motel. You could not get food stamps. You couldn't get any type of governmental program issued to you unless you go through the emancipation process. So you've got this demographic of individuals, specifically between the ages of 14 until they hit 18, that they can be out on their own, but they cannot access services. And so those kids are really the ones that are vulnerable for high levels of exploitation. And we've got a beautiful program in Albuquerque called the McKinney-Vento program that works with our APS students. It works with our homeless families and homeless youth specifically. So their estimates for the 2025 calendar year was that there was about 2,500 homeless APS students. We know that that number is vastly underreported, but let's just assume for a moment that that was an accurate number. So 2,500 kids just in the APS system that are listed as homeless. We know, because of how vulnerable they are just to get basic needs met, that they are potentially approachable to be victimized by individuals that would look to exploit them in any kind of ways. But for somebody that doesn't have adequate housing, adequate food, enough clothing, provisions, when they are in that situation, what takes place in order simply to survive are the things that really boggle the mind. But it is those types of situations that we need to consider as we're looking at our numbers across the state and even just in Albuquerque, that this is a very real problem that we are facing.
And with that, those are numbers from APS McKinney-Vento. Those numbers don't take into account kids when they're not in that system. So we have to understand that there are a number of kids that will not be counted because they have not been in school for a significant amount of time. When somebody leaves that the McKinney-Vento program and kind of drops out, we don't know what happens with them. APS doesn't know what happens with them. And so when Birga says that it's, you know, it's very underreported, it is, because there's not really a great way to manage that. And so when we talk about there's enough services for homeless people, what we're really looking at is we're looking at people who don't come with these extra considerations, or people who are of age. If you are not 18 or older, then there's not enough services. There are two youth shelters. You can only stay in a youth shelter, even if you can get in, which, you know, our children's code says you have to be checked in by a parent or guardian, which may or, you know, the shelters may or may not follow that. But when you are in that shelter, you can only be in for 14 days. After that, you have to leave. And then you can come back potentially, but you have to leave. And so when we're looking at these kinds of things, this doesn't allow for stability for our young people.
So are we talking about the New Mexico legislator now? The New Mexico legislator listening to this program, hopefully there are some, they have to think about the laws that are in place and how those need to change. I know you write legislation all the time, Shelley.
Well, let's be careful with that.
All your free time with your writing legislation.
I work with human trafficking specific legislation. Okay. So, and there's a whole team of that. I don't, you know.
Yeah, I guess. Don't, okay. Yeah. You just participate. I know you are in networking. One of the things we're going to talk about in our next segment too is how you work closely with law enforcement, the Attorney General's office, the various law enforcement agencies. I didn't mean to say, Shelley is doing it all. But you do a lot.
I'm superwoman. But
she is superwoman. This is a long game, though. I mean, reality is nothing's going to happen in the 2026 cycle. It's a 30-day budget, call.
Appropriations.
Appropriation, thank you. So at best, we're looking at 2027. And so, if we happen to have legislators listening right now, 100% call us. We would welcome an appointment to have a longer conversation around what this looks like in terms of adaptation to laws that are on the books right now in order to safeguard our children and in order to have some stiffer penalties around trafficking. But it is a lengthy conversation. And what I think we don't want is reactionary legislation that has unintended consequences, because we've had plenty of that. And so this is something that has to be deeply considered and pondered by people who know how to put the verbiage together. We need to make sure that anything that is introduced is going to, you know, survive some of the brutal examinations that happen on its way through the legislative process. And so we are very open to these conversations. We have already begun these conversations around 2027. It's a long game, and that's really where I think just that lands.
But absolutely, we have to start the dialogue, and yes. I want to play off of something, or at least ask you to define this. You said a minute ago, Shelley, that there are people that are not of age, and they can't access services. And you gave an example that in order for a adolescent to check into a shelter, they have to have parents' permission. Mm-hmm. Well, if they've run away, or they were in a foster care situation that wasn't particularly good. These are people that have made a decision to live on the streets of our various cities rather than live in that home.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So obviously there's some really difficult things going on. So it seems like there ought to be a way to not necessarily remove the authority of the parent, but at least question what's going on in that home and try to get something done about it.
Absolutely. I think one of the things we've seen with this is when you've got a runaway, especially a young runaway, you know, when you're talking 14, 15 years old, and they are continuing to run away, you know, we see that as society, we see that as this chronic runaway person, and there's a, you know, there's a problem with them, and we just, you know, what are we going to do? Something wrong with that kid. What we really need to do is we need to step back and say, what is the reason that this young person is continuing to run away? And this is happening over and over and over again. And looking at kind of addressing and just taking a deeper look at a situation, because we know that, again, as Birga said earlier, we have a lot of exploitation that happens within families. And within that, you can talk about sex trafficking. But here's the other thing, is it can be child sexual assault material, which we formally yes. call child pornography. It can be physical abuse. It can be any form of thing. It could be that there is no freaking food in that house and that kid is hungry. And so when you're looking at that with these chronic runaways, we need to understand that there's a bigger picture there. And how are we going to address that bigger picture?
If you'd like to be part of the New Mexico Dream Center, they're obviously passionate about helping people and people that are in really difficult situations. Go to nmdreamcenter.org, nmdreamcenter.org, or call 505-900-3833. And if you're driving right now, don't stop and write any of that down. Just go to klyt.fm, click on the link, and it'll take you right to their website, klyt.fm. The New Mexico Dream Center is our featured ministry of the month. You'll be hearing about them all month long, and we're so glad that Birga and Shelley can join us. We'll be back. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. Thank you for joining us on ABQ Connect. Happy New Year to everybody. We're going to try to make this new year, if God helps us, be part of His instrument in bringing this about. We want this to be a great year for everybody, including people that are right now living on the streets of Albuquerque. I know that might be a big ask, but I think God can do some amazing things, and He is using the New Mexico Dream Center to help in many ways. So as you're listening, nmdreamcenter.org, they help primarily rescue people that are victims of human trafficking. Minor domestic sex trafficking is one focus. But we're going to talk now about all the services that you provide. And so, Birga, I'll turn it over to you and kind of go through that list of all the different things you're providing to people.
Sure. Thank you. When I'm talking about the Dream Center, I often have people picture an umbrella and then kind of these different channels of rain that drip down from the master umbrella. So if you're thinking about the Dream Center as the umbrella, we've got some channels underneath. So one of them is called the Harbor. So the Harbor is our day services center for youth, and that's going to serve kids aged 14 to 21. That is open to any kid that wants to walk through the door and simply say, hey, I want to come check it out. What's going on in here? Would love to connect with you guys. We have very low barriers to entry. We want kids to walk in the door, feel welcome, feel at home. We want them to connect with us. Doesn't matter what the reason is that they're walking through the door, whether they just had a fight with their parents, they don't have parents, they're escaping something altogether terrible, whatever the reason, we want them to feel safe with us. We have showers, we have washers and dryers so they can do their laundry, we have a hot meal every day we're open, we will always have hygiene products and snacks that they can grab and go. We have an environment that is really designed to make kids feel at peace. We have a clothing closet. We have lots of video games and movies and just big stuffy couches that they can just kind of crash out on and fall asleep if they need to. So we want to have that type of an environment where kids can come in, start to feel a place of rest, start to feel safe, and then hopefully, God willing, connect with staff members. And as they're willing to share some of their story, we want to see how we can get involved. If it is elements of trafficking, we've got different programmatic elements that we can deal with from there. If it's something different, then obviously we may need to connect with some external service providers to see about getting continued care for them. We want to make sure needs are met. We as a, you know, individual service provider cannot meet all needs, and so we definitely are working within a greater network of other folks and organizations that we connect with. So that's the Harbor. Then we have the Eliza Jane House. The Eliza Jane House is our stability home. So it is our shelter home. So that would be for individuals who screen in as survivors of human trafficking. Everyone in that space gets their own room because we want them to begin to build a sense of autonomy. We want to allow them to begin to feel a sense of independence. They have their own closet space that they can store food if they're getting food assistance. They have a little mini safe that they can store their documents or medications. They can begin to feel safe and comfortable living in their own space while part of a larger home community. So it is a 24-hour-a-day monitored home. We have staff there around the clock. We want to make sure that people are safe, that they have their needs cared for, and also begin to teach them basic life skills. We had talked before about the high number of people that are involved in familial trafficking. If you've got somebody who has been trafficked since they were 8 or 10 years old, the chances are they have very low acuity in terms of knowing how to care for themselves. And that's everything from personal hygiene, understanding how to bathe themselves correctly, dress themselves correctly, to the basics in the kitchen. How do I make a pot of coffee? How do I make macaroni and cheese? Some of these things that we think would be intuitive or would be natural things that everyone should know, for a child who was trafficked from a very early age, they likely don't have any of those skills. And so these are some of the things that we are doing within that group home setting. Basic life skills, how to take care of yourself, how to take care of your surroundings, and how do you deal with your next door neighbor who's too loud and they have their music turned up? Do you bust out and start screaming curses at them, or do we learn a different way to engage, right? So it's really learning some of those processes. And then we have a program called Spoken For, which is our long-term care. So that is a two-year program, up to a two-year program, where individuals could take advantage of an apartment lease through the New Mexico Dream Center with intensive case management. So those individuals are then, from that place of getting stabilized, can go into independent living in the form of an apartment, but still be supervised by a case manager, making sure that they are still getting all of the care and the education and support that they need to ultimately go into independent living. So when you think about the gamut of people and their different life experiences, you know, some need a whole lot of services, some need a whole lot of care and instruction and guidance, some maybe are further down that road, but wherever they fall in that spectrum, we want to meet them where they're at, provide the care, and then ultimately the goal is to have them be healthy, fully functioning individuals that are back out in the community, that have jobs, that can pay for their own homes, their own dwellings, and that are contributors to, you know, the better part of, you know, how do they make their lives healthy and robust with relationship and employment and engagement and all of those things. So it's a very large spectrum of services that we provide, and it kind of just depends on where somebody's at when they come into us.
Birga, I'm hearing you say people that are long-term victims don't see themselves the way God sees them.
Yeah.
And Shelley, you told me a long time ago that you can't really share your faith with somebody until you meet their physical needs. I think James would agree with you.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, James, he's pretty wise.
He was wise. I guess my question is, you alluded to it earlier in our first segment, that you've seen people graduate through these different programs and really do well to where you know some adults now that have been through this process and are doing great?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, we look at what does it mean to serve Christ? And what does it mean to share the love of Christ with somebody? And I think that when we are looking at somebody who has experienced trauma and has experienced like this coercion, or what we call manipulation, that we have to be really careful. Because I know, you know, I remember before I was saved, because I, you know, I didn't grow up in a Christian home, and so I got saved in high school. And I
was around when you were waving your hands and worshiping.
Yeah, you might have been there when I walked up to the front, you know, to get saved and all those kinds of things. And I, you know, when we see people with these beautiful intentions of, I want to share this deep love for Christ, but it can feel like manipulation. You know, it can feel like, hey, well, you want to make sure you pray before you eat. Well, that to somebody who has been hungry and has had to wait for food, that feels disingenuous. And so what we want to do is we want to show just this radical, unconditional love towards our young people and all of our people, not all of them are just young people, by showing that grace and that mercy, and our actions really do speak louder than words. That being said, we have a lot of clients who are, we think all of them are on a faith journey at some level, and we know that we're only part of that journey. We're not the whole thing. And that's really an area that volunteers could come into. As the service providers, our roles are limited to what they're doing within our programming, but they're not with us for forever. And so being able to connect with other people, with churches, so that they have this wider community where they feel supported, I think is super, super important. And I think that's an amazing way for someone to be able to see and feel and receive just the love of Jesus in so many different ways.
And most of our clients don't have transportation. I would say it's a rarity that they would have transportation.
So if there was somebody listening right now that might want to just be engaged with people that you're working with, they could pick them up and take them to a nice breakfast and take them to church and establish a relationship with them.
We would ask anybody who's going to work directly with clients to go through a background check. Right. That would be a process that would be required for them to serve in that capacity. But yes, once some of those administrative hoops are cleared, yes, if you've got somebody who says, hey, I'm just going to show up at the house every Sunday at 9 o'clock, whoever wants to go can go out at breakfast and then we'll go to church, we could make that offer to the clients. I, again, would emphasize the long game part of this because it takes consistency, it takes dedication, and our clients need to see, are you going to continue to show up when I have been rude to you? Are you going to continue to show up when I have dismissed you? And it's those people that aren't willing to, or that are unwavering in their determination, like, I'm going to be there whether one person gets in my car or no people get in my car, and I'm just going to do it to see what happens. I think those are the solid gold volunteers because it's time, consistency, rapport building, relationship building that's ultimately going to pay off.
We're going to have another 10 minutes with you, but last question for this segment. I think that you have to have a certain amount of amazing character to survive on the street.
Mm. Yeah, we would say that you've got to have some grit, and that shows itself in a variety of ways, Jim. Mm-hmm.
But have you seen that directed to where people, like you, I think Birga said earlier, you're not used to certain routines because that's not the way you were raised.
Sure.
Do you see people that just begin to see themselves the way God sees them? They just begin to function at a high level and direct that toughness, that grit to things that are going to grow them rather than survive. You know, they feel safe and so now they can grow.
I think with time, that element of really considering your spiritual positioning, your spiritual well-being, it's a long way into the process. It's not something that happens in the beginning stages. I think we would love to say, you know, Jesus is going to be the answer to all of your questions, all of your woes, all of your trauma. And it is true, but saying it and having it be really internalized are two different things and oftentimes months or years apart. And so I think that's the thing that volunteers have to be aware of is we love Christ followers who want to volunteer with the organization, but you are not going to get an instant conversion. You are not going to get the instant gratification of somebody saying, oh, I see the light and now I know who I am in Jesus. It is, again, the long game. It is continuous relationship. It is continually pouring into somebody's life, consistency, showing up. And very often, you know, they see Jesus with your skin on And so you got to be part of the process.
I love it. Birga Alden and Shelley Rep with the New Mexico Dream Center. They'll be with us till 2 o'clock. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. You may not know this, but 2026 January is National Human Trafficking Prevention Month, and our featured ministry of the month is the New Mexico Dream Center. You can find out more about that at nmdreamcenter.org or go to klyt.fm to the homepage, click on the banner, the New Mexico Dream Center banner, and it'll take you right to their website. We're joined by founder and director Shelley Rep and Birga Alden, who is the community relations manager. And Shelley, you shared some stories off the air, and I'd really like you to kind of engage and even call out our listeners, because I think they are listening because they feel God asking them to do something, and they're trying to be led. And the Holy Spirit, I hope, uses this program to help lead people in certain direction to serve.
Yeah, absolutely. When I think God is prompting his people to get involved, there's so many different ways. We have to be willing to say yes to God and be a little uncomfortable potentially, because we don't know what God's going to call us for those next steps. But, you know, being faithful, I think, is a big part. So within this story, this is about one of our young clients and kind of illustrates the way that God can use people to really bring about some positive and some good things. So there's a kiddo that's in our programming who was part of CYFD, and they have been in CYFD for many, many years. And as you get older in CYFD, it's kind of harder to find placements for.
So you're talking about teens, the foster care system.
The foster care system, yes. Okay. Thank you, Jim. And so it's harder to find those foster placements. You, as I'd said earlier, you can only be in a shelter for 14 days. And so as people are going and growing, it can be really, really challenging. And so this young person had been in a foster placement and had a friend there, and they decided to run away. They, you know, for whatever reason, were unhappy or dissatisfied or whatever, and they ran away and they disappeared. And so when you're a foster placement, you have to report that, of course, and nobody could find this kid. And CYFD wasn't looking, the police were alerted, nobody could find these kids. Well, this foster parent paid attention to what these kiddos had said and really started putting together some clues and doing some research and ended up figuring out where these two kids were. They called CYFD. They let CYFD know. There wasn't really a response. They called APD multiple times, not just once, multiple times before APD finally went to this one particular house, knocked on the door, and sure enough, two young kids being exploited in this household.
But you let APD do the door knocking.
Don't kick down doors because that would be dangerous. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think I could kick down a door.
Yeah, but the police did their job.
The police can. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so they were located and then were kind of in the situation of how can we find services, which has been its own nightmare for these young people because they've lived through these horrific things, but now there's not really appropriate services for them. And so this has just continued to be a part of the challenge and the story. So there's a couple of points in here. One is, if that foster parent had not paid attention and then been a bulldog and stuck with, you know, figuring out where this kid was and continuing to call, who knows if they would have ever been found. The other aspect with this is that we're able to provide services, but we do not have a contract with CYFD, so we don't get funded for those services for this young person in particular. And so one of the ways also that people could assist is we're getting ready to start a drive for monthly donors, and this is where those kinds of dollars go to. CYFD isn't paying us, New Mexico, the state New Mexico isn't paying us. We're doing this because we feel this is right. This is what God has called us to. But we know it's more than what we can just manage within our budget. So then it becomes something that's part of the larger community and saying, this is where your dollars can go to help fund this kind of service provision and then this kind of story for this young person.
So nmdreamcenter.org. And are you all happy to answer questions from people, maybe potential donors? They can give you a call. And I probably need to make sure that people have the phone number too. It's 505-900-3833. That's 505-900-3833. The New Mexico Dream Center.org is the website. Birger, you're the community relations person. That means you probably do a lot of education and tell people how to donate money. Is it safe to donate money to the Dream Center?
Absolutely. I'm not the big forward-facing fundraising person, but the education part, absolutely. So I'll say any organization, any business, any club that wants to have our basic human trafficking education piece, we call it HT 101. It's about 45 minutes. We allow time for question and answer, so about an hour's worth of a training. Please call us. I would welcome that opportunity to come train you, your staff, your club, your organization, whatever, around human trafficking. But in terms of safety and donating to us, absolutely. You know, we are a 501c3. We are very, very meticulous in making sure that our funds are going to the designated places that people have given to. Shelley spends so much of her time with reporting and all of the things that have to go into these massive spreadsheets to make sure, you know, all the dollars are accounted for. So, man, if you need somebody to testify about Shelley's extreme time commitment around spreadsheets, I will be the person to testify. But yeah, I mean, that is just part of the work of a nonprofit organization. Anybody receiving any type of grants or, you know, monies that are coming in from a source that has to go to a particular programmatic element or a particular area within an organization, it all has to be documented and accounted for. And absolutely, that all
and
gets
you're
taken
not
care
charging
of.
The young people that
Never.
You help.
No.
Clients don't pay for services at all.
Mm. Yep. We do not have any fees for services. And if you wanted to, I mean, you can go on to the New Mexico Attorney General, which is the New Mexico Department of Justice. They have a system called Soros, C-O-R-O-S, which is the charity registrar. And that has our tax documents that we have to file every year. And it also has our audit documents because we do have audits every single year. So that way it does kind of show where the dollars go to, so to speak, which I think can also be something that people can feel a little bit of comfort around. Within all of it. And so we want to be good stewards of what God has given us. And that's really just really our goal.
How does God keep you two encouraged? I guess I would think that there's so much discouragement that might demotivate you, but you guys are always high energy. We're ready to keep fighting and you love people very much.
I do cry in Shelley's office a few times every month and she keeps me from going crazy. I really am so thankful for this woman, sincerely. I mean, she has been a blessing to me. I think we utilize each other a lot in just having some time to process life together and to talk about the hard stuff and to have fellowship and communion with one another. And I think that has been a huge key in not getting pulled into the darkness of what this work can be sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think having somebody that you can talk to about the reality of where you are and being able to know that just because you're expressing concern or it feels overwhelming, that that doesn't mean that you're crazy or that God can't use you or any of those things. I think part of it, too, for me is that, you know what? I don't like bullies. Like, I don't. And so when I think about, you know, trafficking and these situations around that, it bothers me because I don't like people being taken advantage of and not being able to have say in their life.
Yeah, and I can't imagine the spiritual conviction that someone that is enslaving another person must feel. Have you ever seen a trafficker come to faith in the Lord?
Me personally, I have not.
Yeah, so I haven't, but I have heard like testimonies, you know, like I've seen some things on there on different, you know, video trainings and some stuff like that. So I've seen some stuff. I think that it really does have to come with, you know, this come to Jesus kind of situation that would draw you into it. And that can be hard.
Amazing stuff. Unfortunately, we're out of the hour. Thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect. I appreciate you, Shelley. Thank you very much, Birga.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Contact the nmdreamcenter.org, nmdreamcenter.org, right on their website, or you can call them at 505-900-3833. Happy New Year. Have a great week. We'll see you next Monday.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.